Hi, and welcome to Mainly Middle, a mammal podcast. Today we're talking to Dr. Richard Biffle. And Dr. Richard Biffle is currently a professor of education and anthropology at Thomas College. He teaches courses in education, history, sociology, anthropology, and archaeology. Dr. Biffle has lived and traveled around the world. He's a fascinating human being and a dear colleague and friend of mine, and has an extensive background and experience in the areas of social justice, civil and human rights, equity and diversity training, community organization and planning, teacher education, and multicultural education. He's also experienced in the classroom. He's a former elementary and middle school teacher and an elementary school administrator. So welcome, Dr. Rich Biffle.
Thank you so much for having me, Katie. Good to hear you.
Yeah, same here. So we're going to go ahead and jump into the questions. And some of these are pretty hard-hitting, but I think we have to have an honest conversation about them. So let's start with the first one. Is middle school too early to begin discussions about race outside of a historical context like slavery?
I think it's an important question. And I think that part of my response to that is really citing some basic premises. And one of the basic premises I have is a notion and idea that was presented some years ago related to a question of, do we have the will to educate all children? And it was at a time when, once again, the country, society was going through a number of challenging issues in regards to the curriculum, what we teach in schools, and people had lots of voices and concerns about that. So in answering that question, I always start off with the notion and idea that teaching and learning must have a purpose. And in that, it's what I call a 360-degree interdisciplinary perspective and approach. In other words, we have to draw from a wide variety of places and spaces as we're working with children. I'm not going to say particularly in middle school, I just think it's a continuation of a developmental experience that informs and engages students in problem solving, critical and deep thinking, and participating in explorations and discoveries on what I call an extraordinary life journey. So as we look at middle school, it's a part of the process. The other things I think in terms of answering your question, should these discussions begin in middle school, is we have to also identify certain things that are realities. First and foremost, America has always been multicultural. It's always been a multicultural society. And diversity in this regard is America's greatest strength, even though sometimes we don't attribute the contributions of everyone in the society to the development of what we have created. So that lends itself to people from all backgrounds have contributed to the development of American culture and society. When we start talking about teachers' roles and responsibilities, I often share with teachers and administrators and school communities that teachers must take responsibility for increasing the attention to diversity, social justice, racism, racial intolerance, and racial injustice. These are critical discussions. And once again, we have to look at it in an interdisciplinary way. So in interdisciplinary thinking, you can look at math, you can look at history, you can look at literature, you can look at science, language arts, other kinds of areas, subject areas, and these kinds of discussions can take place. History challenges our world, and it can be discomforting and oftentimes compelling. We are certainly living in a time with probably three curious kinds of pandemics. We have the COVID-19, for sure. We have the racial injustice and racial intolerance issues. And then also we have the economic issues as well. So, again, when you start to talk about this, you have to talk about it from multiple perspectives.
Yeah, absolutely.
My goal, when I was a middle school elementary teacher, is I had to talk about issues that challenge students to think differently about the past and present. So when we start talking about issues of race, ethnicity, contribution, notions and ideas, specificity related to slavery, we have to really begin to look at this again in different ways. color, that's underrepresented people. Because, again, when we use terms, we also have to define what we're talking about. So people of color, underrepresented people, that's Black, Brown, Asian, First Nation, American Indian, have often been omitted from the historical curriculum. In other words, we know very little about what their contributions are. And oftentimes, they're stereotyped, they're identified in ways that are historically inaccurate or woefully short of these. So, in this regard, racial controversies influence our understanding of not only history, but literature, science, language arts, art, humanities, other kinds of thoughts and ideas.
Yeah.
So, again, when we look at the discussion, there is a thread. If you look at the whole curriculum as a tapestry, there are multiple threads related to ideas associated with where do you begin the discussion. As many people know, I'm Vygotskian in terms of scaffolding. And I think the scaffolding of ideas, the scaffolding of presentations of information is important. It starts in elementary school. It actually starts in preschool. So by the time you get to middle school, you should be approaching this in some different ways, in some more authentic kinds of discussions related to what's going on. And then that lends itself to the last point I'd like to make on your question is through reading and discussion, students can begin to see connections between attitudes and social relations. And most certainly middle school is very much associated with those ideas. What are the connections between attitudes and social relations? As students are going through adolescence, as they're going through the various manifestations of adolescence, the whole notion and idea of things in regards to our racial histories and presentations from people outside of their own particular background is critically important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that idea of, you know, the multifaceted view. And I do think that some of our teachers are eager to bring in different perspectives and, you know, especially as they look back at their own education and say, oh, well, I didn't really learn that. I didn't really learn this particular aspect of that person's history, that person's voice. But then they, and sometimes even I used to struggle with how do we go beyond teaching about African American history and culture only during MLK Day and Black History Month? How do we push against that boundary?
Yeah, and I think that, again, you have to broaden your view, and you have to understand current controversies, past controversies, issues, and events. And that's where, again, I go into teaching and learning must have a purpose, that 360-degree perspective. It's a 365-day-a-year approach. I think it was well-intended, and I still encourage and support the notion of African-American history months and days, because in many places and spaces, if you didn't do that, it would be completely taken out. And I've heard that from a number of people. So, once again, through these kinds of efforts, students can learn to see diversity and conflicting perspectives as a basic characteristic of their learning. And that's critically important. Teachers have to help students develop the skills necessary to engage in inquiry. This is where you have inquiry classrooms. I think it's important that diversity is valued in what I call communities of inquiry. Students have natural questions, you know, that they want to ask. And this is where, again, the notion and idea of knowing what you know or expanding your knowledge base through readings, articles, documentaries, other kinds of means of informing yourself are critically important. I don't think it's a good idea that if you don't know something about it, you simply default and say, well, I'm not going to teach that, or we're not going to have that as part of the curriculum. I remember particularly a thorny issue because I was teaching on the West Coast at a university when the tragic Rodney King situation developed. And suddenly, Los Angeles basically started burning itself down. And I remember I had been invited into a middle school classroom that day, unbeknownst, you know, that all these events were occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked into a third period third period, I walked in. I had a presentation that I was going to do on another subject and another topic. And I decided to just ask the students, what's on your mind? It seems like there's something happening. And a very brave young woman raised her hand and she said, can you explain to us what's going on in Los Angeles? And it gave me the opportunity because, again, being, you know, part of my life growing up in Southern California, I knew a whole lot about that.
Yeah.
As a teacher, as a community organizer, as an activist. And I began to just draw a picture of Los Angeles. And literally, I drew a picture of Los Angeles County. I drew a picture in terms of the demographics. I drew a picture in terms of the issues. I drew basically areas of what I called entrenched ethnic groups, be they black, be they brown, be they Asian, etc. I said, the first thing you got to understand is what you're dealing with. The second thing you have to understand is the problems associated with what happened. And this is where you get into racism, prejudice, and discrimination. I have the students begin to talk about, if you hear those terms, what do you think it means? What I was doing was trying to guide them through a process of discussion, inquiry. What questions do they have? And then we did that, and I only had an hour, which was really interesting.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, students were asking me, could you come back and talk about that more? And I said, well, that's up to your teacher, you know.
Yeah.
But I'd be more than willing to come back. And I ended up going back three times.
That's awesome.
Because they really wanted to understand what was going on. Because in terms of their classes, and then as one student told me about the third time I went, the day that you came in, we were in our third period, and none of our previous instructors, teachers would talk about any of it. In fact, I was in a second period class, and I asked the question, and the teacher said, well, that's not part of our curriculum, so we're not going to talk about it.
Mm.
And, you know, that shuts students down.
Yeah.
In terms of questioning, inquiry, thoughts, ideas. They weren't looking for the answer. They were just looking for an opportunity to talk about how they felt about what they were seeing. So when you start talking about African history, you know, African American history as well, and culture and tradition, when you only look at it through the lens of a day, a week, and a month, that gets fixated in people's minds.
Right.
And I think that that's the only time you think about it. Another piece going beyond African American history and culture is to talk about the issues in regards to slavery. Most of us, the whole discussion of slavery was very, very brief. Africans basically were brought from Africa. No discussion whatsoever about what part of Africa, which is critically important to the conversation.
Yeah.
They weren't brought to the United States. They were taken to the West Indies and basically broken. And nobody talks about that. And then suddenly there's a discussion about enslaved Africans in terms of working on plantations, the Civil War, maybe a little bit of discussion about Reconstruction. And then, you know, cricket in terms of what happened.
Sure.
And so there's lots of disconnects in terms of that. I propose in the class, the history class, and I've heard it from other people, too, that one of the things and topics you need to talk about, enslaved Africans and their descendants have developed a vibrant set of cultural traditions, beliefs, values, ways of thinking. And nobody thinks about that. They just think about the whole idea if you're enslaved that all of a sudden you don't think, you have no life, and other things.
Yeah.
People had to adapt and adjust, even as horrific as that was. So it lends itself again to the discussion. Students should see enslaved people not just as victims, but as creative and insightful human beings.
Yeah.
There was a whole language that happened, a whole language transformation that happened. It's estimated that some 600 African languages were part of African enslavement. How do you begin to change language?
Yeah.
Those of us that are involved in linguistics understand that's a critically important discussion. How do you do that? What kinds of things do you do? But But you have to think literally outside many, many boxes. So that's part of my response. I prefer that we do it 365 days a year in terms of the celebration of people rather than days and weeks and months. But given certain kinds of thoughts and ideas associated with what we know and how we know it, I most adamantly support the notion of we continue to do what we do.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that idea of going beyond African Americans as victims and really celebrating culture, I think is something that we can do better as teachers of middle school students, teachers across K-12, across higher ed circles, really, to integrate that culture that's so important. So one of the questions that I had written down for you was that we have to face the reality of Maine and as the whitest state in the U.S. And how do you and how do we have productive conversations about race when most, if not all, of our middle school students are white?
Well, again, I think that challenges and issues abound, you know, in terms of because demographically Maine tends to be a certain spin, and in this case, certainly in terms of the ethnic presentation or the racial presentation of being white, it doesn't mean that we automatically don't talk about things.
Sure.
You know, Maine is still part of the United States of America. It is still recognized in terms of a sound, if not very, very good education system that prepares students for various kinds of things that they're going to be doing. But the problem simply gets back into notions and ideas, and it's again the idea of whose history, whose conversation, and for what purpose. And I think that a default position sometimes that educators take, and I'm not speaking in generalities because I think there's enough research that supports this. If we don't have certain kinds of demographic diversity in our communities, then why should we talk about all these other things? So one of the things that I say that we need to really address is focusing on important themes in history that makes the study of the state and local history more meaningful.
Mm.
When I moved to Maine, it was real curious. I was at a bookstore down in Portland, and this is unsolicited. I was just going through basically the stacks, as I usually do, looking at things. And one of the managers walked up to me and handed me a book. And it was real interesting because I had never met this person, and I had no idea who she was. And so she said, I think you'd be interested in this book. Now, ordinarily, you know, my radar would go up and my antennae would go up, and I go, okay, what's up with all of this?
Yeah.
But I think that for some reason something happened with her antennae and radar, and I looked to be a teacher, perhaps. I looked to be an educator. Because I was looking at different kinds of things relative to subject matter, et cetera.
Mm.
And then the title of the book was Maine's Visible Black History.
Mm.
And I had to admit, I was rather astonished because I was like, somebody actually wrote a book about Maine's black history?
That's incredible, yeah.
Again, you know, being new, you know, I knew very little about it. It's a book that I think every educator in Maine should read. Another book that I think is critically important is a book called The New Mainers, and it talks about immigrant populations that have come to Maine. There is another book called Black Bangor. It was written about the black population, the African-American population in Bangor, Maine. I mean, I've lived in a lot of places and spaces, but those three books really kind of spoke to me, and I was like, isn't this interesting? But then when I got out and started working with schools and teachers, and nobody had ever heard of these books.
Mm.
So when you start talking about productive conversations about race, sometimes you have to start at home. You have to start here. You don't have to go other places and spaces. You know, the South certainly has been challenged with issues over periods of time. Well, the South is not the only place. I grew up principally in the West. The West has issues.
Yeah.
Northeast has issues. But again, you have to begin to look for things that are meaningful. So it lends itself, again, to students need to learn from social forms for engaging in debates and discussions on controversial issues. You know, when you start talking about various kinds of historical things with Maine, there's been lots of discrimination, oppression, and repression in Maine. Some of it was religious in nature. You know, some of it was economic in nature. But some of it most assuredly was racial in nature.
Yeah.
And I think that those kinds of things, if you're going to talk about ideas, you talk about them.
Yeah.
So basically, Katie, what it gets back into, history instruction has traditionally de-emphasized diversity. You know, it's not something that we talk about. And what I talk about, diversity is valued in communities of inquiry. So I think as we talk about best practices, as we talk about informed kinds of ways of doing things, we have to really talk about communities of inquiry. This is a different generation of students.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, they're more informed, more connected, and they're trying to make sense of their place in a complicated society.
Yeah.
And I think that we do them a disservice by not talking and addressing some of these issues. And it goes back to the idea that children do not enter school as blank slates. These students are coming with a lot of things. And I realize that, you know, there are high-stakes testing issues and other kinds of things relative
sure.
to what we think students should know. But if you don't know how to be a productive, contributing member of society, then again, you can't just look at the memorization of facts as the only way you learn something.
Yeah.
And so, again, there are just multiple layers of what we do.
Sure. Yeah, and that authentic instruction, even going back to what you had mentioned earlier about the students being inquisitive, just wanting to know, not needing an answer, but just curious, right? And that's something that's so wonderful about middle school students in particular that I've loved, is they're so curious about the world and they're starting to make sense of, okay, how do I participate in society? I'm going to say those titles back to you and you can correct me if I'm wrong. So Maine's Visible Black History, New Mainers, and Black Bangor. Is that right?
Yes, yeah, those are the three books that I would strongly recommend that all Mainers read.
Okay.
Because it really talks in depth about a number of things. There are also several books just related to First Nation people. And when I say First Nation, it's also the meaning of Native American people, although many of my First Nation brothers and sisters prefer First Nation because they were here first.
Yeah.
They have never been given, you know, the decent, respectful kinds of pieces in terms of who was here. So the overlaps in terms of not only conversations about race, ethnicity, etc., we don't talk about that. There are five major tribal groups in Maine. We don't mm-hmm. talk about those.
Yeah.
And we most assuredly don't talk about some of the oppressive and repressive things that were done with them.
Yeah.
So as we're trying to prepare students for their roles, you know, multiple roles, actually, in terms of being leaders and proponents of good information,
mm-hmm.
random acts of kindness, etc. It starts, I think, you know, again, as a continuation of the discussion out of elementary school into middle school.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's very important as we move towards, and this is the last question for you, as we move towards these kinds of conversations that are controversial, that will lend a space, you know, sometimes when we hear of teachers who say, oh, well, that's not on the curriculum, it's really a discomfort for us as instructors saying, how do I deal with these questions that I don't know the answer to personally, or that I'm afraid I have a biased view, right? That implicit bias. So as we start to talk about more what would be considered, I think, controversial conversations, what rationales and conversations should we prepare as we move towards, you know, this idea and notion of interdisciplinary instruction with voices, culturally sustaining pedagogy, whatever you want to call it, and addition of equity in our curriculum when with or when parents, administrators, or colleagues dissent? What kind of conversations should we prepare for those stakeholders?
Again, a very important question, a very deep question with multiple layers in terms of what goes on. I think we start off with one way of looking at this is people learn best when they understand the purpose of their learning. You know, why am I learning? You know, what is the point? Where is it that I'm going to discuss some things or experience some things relative to cultural diversity, ethnic diversity, issues associated with oppression, repression, racial injustice, racism, discrimination? Where am I going to run into these things?
Yeah.
So you have to make the connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes back again to the whole thing of when history challenges our worldview, it can be discomforting. It can be compelling again. A lot of things when we start talking about what's going on are uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But you have to be able to, as often as said, look at somebody else's perspective, understand what their lives are like. And that's a deeper discussion.
Yeah.
Students need to be given the choice of collecting information from people other than family members.
Mm-hmm.
You have to begin to engage students at where they're at. That's what I meant earlier, but they don't come as blank slates. They're coming basically informed. And it's not a judgment call evaluation necessarily about how they're being informed. But students need to have the opportunity to collect information from people other than their immediate family.
Mm-hmm.
The kinds of things that are critically important. African American people are highly diverse. Latino Hispanic people are highly diverse. First Nation people are highly diverse. Asian American people are highly diverse. You know, it's not this kind of one-size-fits-all mindset that sometimes is presented.
Yep.
I think another piece is the teacher role again. Teachers who genuinely value diversity among students do not see differences as deficiencies.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something else that we have to talk about in terms of a qualitative discussion. Oftentimes when you talk about diversity, it's viewed sometimes by certain people, by certain levels of instruction, as a deficit. It has never been a deficit.
Yeah.
It's just a deficit in so much as somebody's interpretation, which in my view tends to be rather limited in terms of what they know and how they know it. Yeah. History can provide students an expanded perspective of their place in society. I think that that's another thing that we're trying to move toward. We want students to understand that they do have a place. This is a very complicated time, as I've said,
mm-hmm.
for generations of students. It doesn't matter if it's pre-K, elementary, middle school, high school, or college, university. Because so much that's happening has not been presented in terms of discussion and information. So, again, attempts to tell a more inclusive story about American history at times are met with fierce resistance.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you don't want to talk about why is it that communities explode? Why is it that people are treated a certain way? Why is it that you know some things about some things and you don't know other things about other things? I come from a rich African American tradition. I come from a highly educated family. You know, and again, when I start talking about these, I'm talking about these as somebody who has experienced these two things, and as somebody who oftentimes is the first and only person in the positions I've been in as a teacher,
mm-hmm.
they need to hear something different.
Yeah.
They need to understand. When somebody asked me, what did your father do? I said, my father was a Tuskegee Airman.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even know how to pronounce Tuskegee.
Yeah.
Once we get to the point where they know how to pronounce it, then somebody says, well, what's a Tuskegee Airman? My father was a fighter pilot for 30 years in the Air Force.
Yeah, amazing.
All of a sudden, yeah. It's like stereotypes and other kinds of issues related to who I am begin to get these puzzled looks on people's faces. My father was one of the black pilots that was trained during World War II. My father was a combat fighter pilot in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. I mean, it's like you don't hear these stories.
No, yeah, you don't.
My mother wanted to go to law school. If she had not married my father, she would have been the first African-American woman in Colorado at the University of Denver to go to law school.
Wow.
You know, it's like you don't hear these things.
Yeah.
So history sometimes is controversial in terms of knowledge, because it goes back to whose knowledge and for what purpose. Racial controversies influence our understanding of history. The civil rights movement opened up all kinds of issues related to challenges and issues associated with African American people. 1954, Brown versus the Board of Education opened up things. But people don't talk about the health issue. They don't talk about the economic issue, the socio-political issue. You have to talk about that. And that's where history is more than just politics.
Right.
Because it's usually focused on politics, wars, and diplomacy. That's what we learn.
Yeah.
We don't learn anything about other kinds of layers.
Yeah. And so voices, yeah.
See diversity and conflicting perspectives as part of history.
Yeah.
And then the last couple of things it gets back into, and you said something a little bit ago, it's important to be involved in authentic projects involving learning beyond the school boundary.
Yeah.
You've got to get outside. You've got to find out what goes on. And it respects the fact that families have different historical experiences. But it also suggests when students are fully engaged and enthusiastic about their studies, parents oftentimes are as well.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. Yeah, when they see that excitement, how can you say no to that, right?
Yeah, well, hopefully, because it is a collaborative effort.
Right.
You know, it is the home, the school, and the community at large.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's very true. Dr. Rich Biffle, this has been so amazing. I've learned so much already. I've been taking notes quietly. Hopefully the recording hasn't picked it up. That's all that we have for today. But I'm really excited to be a participant in the webinar that you've graciously agreed to run. If you all who are listening are interested in hearing more from Dr. Rich Biffle, visit mainmammal.org for webinar information about race, equity, and diversity, especially in middle school. And we'll hear more from Dr. B then. Thank you again so much for joining us for this conversation today.
Well, I appreciate it. And once again, I'm honored to be part of the discussion.
Yeah. Thank you again. And I'm going to go ahead and tune off now.